সুতস্তানের জলে লিখেছি নাগনাম, না শোনা থাকবো না থাকবো না আর না শোনা থাকবো না থাকবো।
হ্যালো এন্ড ওয়েলকাম, ইটস মি লুক Friend for sure, and this is the new series of the successor to the Bristol to Beijing podcast. So whatever this series is called, whatever it will become, this is the beginning, and I guess this will be a journey together to see where it takes us. But I guess the aim of the podcast now is to share my thoughts and experiences in this year 2024. I've just turned 30. I've got a year of racing, book writing, filmmaking, and probably a few other things ahead, and I kind of want to share the journey. It was something that was really special and important during the ride, and I think since having had 18 months since the last time I recorded a podcast, and 18 months away from constantly being on show and sharing my past, my story, very, very often, that space has allowed me the time to reflect and realize what a special thing it is to be able to share these experiences, and at least for a few people, they find them interesting, perhaps, or they've just been polite. So really, this podcast, I hope going forwards, will be super informal, very relaxed, and I'm making a few ground rules for myself. The first one is that this is going to be a one-take wonder. I don't have time and I don't want to make this super perfect, so I'm going to talk. It's going to be, I have some notes in front of me of stuff I want to talk about, but there might be some imperfections, some pauses, some ahs, and I'm not going to do a heavy job of editing that out. The second thing I really want to prioritize in this podcast is to make it as, I guess, candid and honest as possible, which is not something I necessarily find easy, particularly because a lot of the time I feel I should always be positive, because that is a big part of me and I do believe in that positivity. But I also want to give space on this podcast, through these episodes, to say however I'm feeling, and to share that. And I think the second thing is, I kind of also want to be honest with the experiences that I've had and not always perpetually feel like I've got to say everything was perfect and everything was great and everyone was great. So I hope I can really share that with all of you. Now, I'm recording today from Bristol Harbourside. I can see the picture and piano, the V-shed, and Bristol's rather lame equivalent of the London Eye. It's much smaller and it's not sponsored by anyone. But I thought this would be a really nice place to record the podcast, because it very much reflects the change in locations since when I recorded that special one-off episode outside the Russian embassy in Bishkek, which was only, what, like a week and a half ago, and I'm now on the other side of the world, and I'm surrounded by familiarity. And I thought that would be quite a nice point to start about what has struck me since coming back to the UK, and what my thoughts and impressions are of Kazakhstan, and particularly quite a few of you asked some questions, so I want to have some time to answer those questions in this podcast episode. So, my initial impressions of coming back to the UK. Well, on the plus side, I felt everything actually works pretty well here. I was impressed that at Stansted Airport, I wasn't waiting long for my bags. I got through passport control very quickly. It was a smooth train down to the centre of London, and that was a bit of a surprise, because I've definitely been struck in the past when I've come back from, say, China, just thinking, oh my goodness, Heathrow Airport, what a mess, waiting for my bags for an hour. Is this really the first impressions that so many people are going to be getting of the UK? It feels like we're a decade behind China. Now, it's not to say that things don't work, or things work terribly in Kazakhstan, and generally they work pretty well. But I just was struck this time, but actually, you know, things in the UK, we have a pretty decent infrastructure, and that is not something to be sniffed at. However, I think for me what has really struggled with, and the thing I've really noticed having spent sort of 4 months out of the UK, is just how familiar everything seems. And I'm not a big fan of that. You know, I know how everything works. I understand all the signs. I know how to get on the subway. If I'm walking around, everything makes sense. And in fact, that's something I really miss already about Kazakhstan, that there was always a challenge. There was always a certain level of almost discomfort there, because if I was reading a sign, yeah, sure, I might be able to understand a lot of it. But even if I could understand a lot of it, it was rare that I could really understand perfectly the signs or what people were saying around me. And I love that challenge. I love that daily stimulation and that feeling that I need to be raising my game, I need to be improving. And that was a really stimulating challenge. And having come back to the UK, I feel that I now miss it. Everything just seems too straightforward, too easy. And I kind of liked that roughness, that unfamiliarity, that thing to sink my teeth into in Kazakhstan. I think also I'm very struck, and it's a bit of a cliche, particularly, you know, coming from the UK, but the weather here is a bit of a downer. This morning it was raining. Yesterday it was just grey. And yeah, it's just not as nice as Kazakhstan in winter, where you've either got sun or snow, and that is just an awesome combination. And last night I went to the Bristol University Running Group, which is my favourite running group. It's a big reason why I love coming back to Bristol. Probably the biggest reason I love coming back to Bristol, apart from my coffee machine and, of course, my darling mother, who might be listening to this, so I better say that. But I was talking to some of the runners yesterday, and they were like, yeah, February, no sun, just rain. And I was just thinking, I feel so lucky that I was in Kazakhstan, and there was a lot of sun there, and I somehow even managed to get a bit of a tan in -5 degrees. So I want to now go to some of the questions that a few people have asked, and thank you so much to everyone who sent in a question, and I really hope that this can be more of a conversation. I think in the past I just told stories and I didn't listen too well, but I would really appreciate your questions for every episode moving forwards, because I don't really know what is interesting for you to hear about, and I would love for this to be driven by, I guess, what you're interested by. So do always send me questions, and I will do my very best to answer them honestly, candidly, and probably in too much detail. So Dasha asked, you know, how do you feel about being back in the UK after 4 months abroad? You know, what has struck you particularly coming back? And I think to answer that, I remember before I left for Kazakhstan at the end of November, I wrote in my diary a few things, and I was saying, I don't feel that comfortable here. I want a home, I want stability, but I don't feel that's the UK. I want to be in the mountains, but I also don't want to be by myself. I want a community, I want a group of friends. So maybe I want to go to Chamonix, maybe I want to go to Girona, maybe I want to go to Karakol in Kyrgyzstan. And, I haven't really tried to live in any of these places, and I don't really have any friends or community in those places, so how does this even work? And I think coming back, it has really brought home to me how much I don't, right now in my life, feel much of an affinity for the UK, or particularly want to be here, as harsh as that sounds. And I actually found pretty much everything I was hoping for you know, mountains, a community, a chance to speak Russian, and a base and a home in Kazakhstan, which was not the place I expected to spend this winter. And it was only by chance that I ended up going to Almaty to see Dasha and Mitya, and then I thought I'd spend 3 nights on sleeping on their floor, and I ended up spending 3 months there, still sleeping on their floor. So thank you guys for putting up with me. So I think that's just kind of brought it home that I kind of knew I wasn't in the right place, but in a very vague way at the end of last year. And now coming back, it feels that much more acute that, at least right now, this isn't the place for me. I also got a question from Maggie. Maggie, thank you so much for your questions about why did you choose Kazakhstan? What were your expectations going there? What experiences did you have? Now, Kazakhstan, I guess I sort of have spent enough time there that I kind of assume people know a fair amount about Kazakhstan, but it's not really true. Most people kind of have vaguely heard of it, perhaps through Borat. And even in the film Borat, the scenes shot there were in fact shot in Romania. And it's a bit of a joke that the director and star Sacha Baron Cohen plays on the audience that we might mistake Kazakhstan for Romania, Romania for Kazakhstan. We know so little about Kazakhstan that it might as well be Romania. Now, Kazakhstan is one of the largest countries in the world. I think it's the 7th largest country by area. It borders Russia to its north, a very long border, which makes the Kazakhs quite nervous because there's lots of space for tanks to roll over, which for some reason is more of a concern now than it was. To its east, it borders China. Now, Kazakhstan is actually one of the few countries in the world that operates a surplus export. It exports more to China than it imports, and that is down to its oil and gas. Kazakhstan is a huge oil and gas producer, most of which comes from the west of the country on the Caspian Sea. And there are these rather bizarre settlements there. They're little pockets of America, as Chevron and the big major oil companies, super major oil companies, sort of set up shop there and built their own communities for Americans, Europeans. And in fact, during my time in Kazakhstan, when I was skiing one day, I bumped into one of my ski instructor friends, Arseny, who was teaching a girl called Penelope, who definitely wasn't from Kazakhstan or Russia. Turns out she was from Texas, and she wasn't even living in Almaty, she was living in Atyrau, which is on the shores of the Caspian Sea, and her family from Texas had upplanted, moved to Atyrau, and are living in basically what is Little Texas in a small pocket, a gated community. Anyway, all of this is to say that there is a huge amount of oil and gas produced or extracted in Kazakhstan, and a lot of it is exported to China. Now, on the southern border, Kazakhstan borders Kyrgyzstan and also Uzbekistan, and that sort of takes us into the sort of heart of Central Asia. Now, Almaty itself is a very interesting city. It is very modern. It is very developed. If you arrived in Almaty, you might well think that you are in, you know, Eastern Europe. Perhaps, the man says, having not been to Bulgaria, perhaps somewhere like Sofia, I don't actually know. Or maybe somewhere a bit like Bucharest. There's a metro, there are buses, there are so many coffee shops selling great flat whites, which is of course my priority. There is a huge business center made out of this blue glass that towers in the north, in the southern skyline. It's almost like a fortress. It's so big, and there are these huge two big towers that rise up, made out of this blue reflective glass. So there's actually quite a lot of money in Kazakhstan, in Almaty itself, and you will see loads of Mercedes, BMWs, Land Cruisers, Lexuses on the streets. But whilst there's a lot of money, it's also got a very large population of people who aren't earning very much. And I think the minimum wage is about $500 a month. And if you speak to any taxi driver, they will tell you they are struggling to get by. And given it's a place where prices are only a little bit cheaper than the UK, and the minimum wage and what a lot of people earn is $500 a month, it is a great city if you're in business and doing well, or in the oil and gas, or a politician. But for someone with a unspectacular job, at least financially, it's a tough place to live. So why did I choose Kazakhstan? Why did I choose to go to this place that few people have heard of? What was the attraction? And as I mentioned, I didn't even mean to go to Kazakhstan. I meant to go to Kyrgyzstan, where I've worked before in the past at the University of Central Asia. But the big reason was I had this dream that I would speak fluent Russian by the time I was 30. And late last year, I thought, well, am I serious about this dream? Do I care about trying to achieve this dream? And I've just turned 30. It was at the beginning of March. And I have to say, I'm very pleased that I did at least attempt to get my Russian fluent, or better than it was, over the last 4 months. And is it fluent? I would say no. I can talk for 2 or 3 hours on an evening entirely in Russian. I can understand a lot, but can I understand films when people are talking really quickly or in groups? No. Or with great difficulty. I certainly can't understand everything. So to me, there's still a long way to go before fluency, but I think one of the things I've realized is that my conceptions of what fluency meant back in November were quite far of the mark, and it was an unrealistic expectation to be fluent, very likely. But also, that's not the most important thing. I think the most important thing is that I went out to Kazakhstan to try and follow this dream, and the adventure that it took me on is the most important thing. And I'm very glad I just went in the first place and spent that time there. Even if I didn't end up speaking fluent Russian, it took me on a journey that was much more interesting and fulfilling than had I spent the winter in Bristol. Now, Maggie also asked, what experiences did I have? And the first time I tried to think about this, I thought, well, I didn't really have that many experiences or adventures. And then I ran it past a friend who said, well, actually, sort of what you did most days by most people's standards would be an adventure. So I thought I'd tell you about what a typical day was like for me. Or if not typical, a day I'd have sort of 3 or 4 times a week. So I was living right in the south of the city, which is the part closest to the mountains, in a Soviet-era apartment block. It's sort of grey concrete, beigey concrete on the outside, just in a small studio apartment with Mitya and 2 cats. I'd get up at 6:30 in the morning, probably waking up Mitya, but he said he liked to be woken at 6:30, have a coffee, put on my running kit, and then I would spend the next 2 hours running up the Essentai River, which is this small little river with a sort of footpath, tarmac footpath running next to it. And I'd run up this river, up into the mountains, carry on further, wiggle my way past the gondola, the Medeo ice rink, and all the way to the Shymbolak ski resort at 2,400 meters. So I'd be running about 20 kilometers, climbing about 1,500 meters, and it was a joy. It was incredible, and every single day I did this, I felt so, so lucky that I was running, I was surrounded by these epic mountains, I was in the fresh air, my body was working, I was no longer injured, my back was okay. I felt just very, very blessed. And when I got to the ski resort, I'd go into the MasterCard lounge using my flatmate's extra special MasterCard to let me into this lounge. And I would then work on my book for 4-5 hours, something like that. Maybe I'm exaggerating a bit, probably more like 3 or 4 hours. And then if I had enough time, I'd then go ski touring. I'd go up to the top, the Tolgarski Pass, which was about 3,200. So I'd sort of skin my way up and then ski my way back. And then I'd usually be running out of time and I'd immediately throw my skis into a locker, put on my running kit and run the 20 kilometers back down to the flat. There I'd usually have 2 or 3 hours of tutoring, which is kind of how I've been keeping myself going over the last year, really, I suppose. Which is amazing because I can do it from my laptop, I can do it anywhere, and I'm fortunate enough to speak English, so that means I'm qualified. And then 3 evenings a week I'd have a Russian lesson. So I'd go from my teaching English to then being taught Russian with my lovely teacher, Nadezhda, who we always had a good laugh. She was Christian. I think she was trying to make me a Christian again and was kind of working on me, but she was never successful. But we talked a lot about love, I think. That was a big topic, and relationships, and we can dive into that next time. She's had lots of stories. Anyway, so that was some of the experiences I had in Kazakhstan. Now, I also got a few questions from Marjan, who is one of my very good friends out in Almaty. And she has asked, how would you describe Almaty in one word? And the word that I've come up with is home. Home is what Almaty really, really felt like for the time I was there. I had a wonderful group of friends. I had a place where I could live with, which was cozy. It was small, but there were cats, and Mitya and I got on very well, and we'd watch sort of movies together, we'd cook together, we'd stretch together. So it was a very companionable living arrangement. And it was a place I could pursue my passions of running out in the mountains and also write a good chunk of my book, though not all of my book, which was the plan, but yeah, not everything happens. And I think the other thing it's worth saying is that, you know, as much as I go on and on about Kazakhstan and Almaty, it's not a perfect city either. It has a lot of air pollution, particularly in winter. There are huge traffic jams. The sidewalks tend to have potholes. The number of times I was almost knocked off my bike, I kind of lost count. There are a lot of things that aren't so great when you live in a place that's a bit rough around the edges. So that was, you know, so it's not like the kind of the perfect place, and I think a lot of people wouldn't be able to live there. But for whatever reason, there was the right combination of factors for me to feel like this was home. Marjan also asked, well, how would you describe the local community? And for me, I found it very easy to make friends in Almaty. And I've lived in Russia 6 years ago when I was in Tumen. And I found it significantly more difficult to make friends there. I tended to find that Russians were a little bit more closed off, a little bit harder to get that initial spark. But, you know, it's not a fair comparison. I'm a very different person to the person I was 6 years ago. I think I'm probably more outgoing, a little bit more bullish and persistent in trying to meet up with people, and having met a lot of people on the cycle ride, I'm sort of quite at ease doing that. It's also striking that a lot of my friends in Kazakhstan were also Russian. So I don't know how much that sort of previous stereotype really holds true. But I think the other thing that's really important to mention is that a lot of these friendships, or the people I then became friends with, were seeded from the Bristol to Beijing cycle ride. So when I was in Almaty in summer of 2021, I met a lot of people, and those people that I met then, Marjan, Akbar, Janara, Sunkar, they remained friends and they formed the nub of my community when I was in Almaty this winter. So I think a big part of me feeling like I had this great community and people were very welcoming was down to the fact I had been to Almaty before. And it's an amazing legacy of the ride now to be able to renew these friendships and then make them deeper, even though the ride itself finished years ago now. Now, the final question that Marjan asked, which I thought was a very thought-provoking one, quite a provocative one, and certainly one befitting a psychologist, which she is, she asked, what are you willing to sacrifice for emotional comfort? And I feel this is a question that kind of takes us on a bit of a full journey when it comes to at least this episode. That when I was in the UK, I certainly wasn't as happy or as stimulated as I would have liked to have been. And I found a lot of that emotional comfort in Kazakhstan. I found, you know, there was a lot to engage with. Every day I was trying to improve my Russian. Every day had new experiences. And that was something I found very stimulating. And of course, I just loved the mountains. The fact that I could walk about a minute from the flat and look up and you could see these amazing mountain range that stretched behind the city. They were covered in snow. In the evening, they would be sort of a peach pink color. They just always inspired my spirits and lifted my spirits and sort of inspired my writing. And I think that gave me a lot of emotional comfort as well. But on the flip side, what have I left behind, or what did I leave behind in the UK as I sort of perhaps somewhat selfishly sought out this discomfort or tried to flee the discomfort that I felt in Bristol? And I guess above all, I'd be thinking about my mum, who's in Bristol, who always loves having me around here, but it's kind of sad that I don't love being in Bristol as much as she loves having me in Bristol. And then, of course, my friends. And it's something that I don't take for granted, that I have these incredible friends and an incredible mum who puts up with me being gone for 4 months and then coming back and still welcoming me with open arms. And this was really brought home to me this past weekend when all my university friends, we gathered together in an Airbnb in Hazelmere, just outside of London, in these two converted barns. And we just had the best weekend together. We had Easter egg hunts, we played rounders, we had sort of silly dinners, we danced together in a way that, you know, in some way, you know, like the Easter egg hunt, we were like little kids. And I think it's so amazing to be 30 and still be able to be with people like a little kid, that kind of excitement, that silliness of hiding eggs and then discovering them. So that's really, really special. But I feel what's most special for me is that my friends, as I said before, put up with me being gone for several months and they have all these meetings and I'm not there. And then when I come back, I say, guys, I would love to see you. I know I haven't really been around and I haven't engaged in any of these events and I've missed all sorts of things, but I'd still love to see you. And I feel so, so grateful that my friends, you know, we do come together and we do have this opportunity to hang out. And it's, yeah, they're just an awesome, awesome group of friends. So any of them who are listening, you guys know who you are. Thanks so much for putting up with me. And it is just so, so precious. So I think that we are now getting towards the end of this first episode. There's lots more I want to talk about in future episodes, talking about my upcoming races in America, and then also the European Championships will be my first time representing Team GB. I would also love to talk more about the book, how that is going, and then also the process of making a film and lifting the lid on some of that. It's something I talk about. I've said I'm making a film for years now. Well, why am I still making the film? Why is it taking so long? So if you have any questions about any of those topics, do send me a message on Instagram. and I would love that to form a big part of this next episode. Got a group of school kids who are just coming up now, making lots of noise, so I think it is high time to finish this episode. Thank you so much for listening. I hope you enjoyed, and I hope this will also be, you know, the first of many episodes, which will get better and better as I get a bit more experience talking into the microphone. So thank you for putting up with me umming and ahhing my way through this. Have a great week, and till next time. Bye.